Welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. We are still hurtling towards episode 200. Please check out all of the incredible videos we have on the YouTube channel. Like, subscribe, turn on the notification bell, if that's indeed what it's called, because we are releasing an episode a week. Indeed, we have been ever since we started. Now, we always want to try and zone in on themes and topics that are ever important to leaders in their organizations. And something that keeps coming up in conversation is simplicity. It seems that as human beings, we are wired for complexity. We're creating ever more complex systems to try and navigate. But how do we create simplicity? So, like all of these episodes, I need someone far wiser than myself. And this episode is powered by Heidrick & Struggles, a premier provider of global leadership advisory and on-demand talent solutions. Now, how do I know that? Well, Adam and I both happen to be partners at that illustrious organization. So come back to me just after this break, where Adam Howe will help us navigate the topic of killing complexity and embracing simplicity. Come back to me just after this. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Adam, huge warm welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to be here.
I think let's just get a reaction from you. I know you're over from New York right now because that's where you live. Mm. What do you think?
What a studio. I'm amazed. I got in an Uber this morning up to Mill Hill and this is kind of exceeding my expectations. It's great to be here.
I think that's a nice way to start, isn't it? Now, Adam, you are a partner at Heidrick & Struggles, but tell us a little bit about your background or journey to this point.
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. So I set up part of a media company between my A-levels and university. Only a few years ago, yeah, exactly. And it was kind of boiler room selling advertising space, which was a really good kind of experience. And then my mum decided that I should probably get a proper job. So I went into management consultancy at Accenture. I then went from Accenture to MindGym, who are a performance transformation organization who are using psychology to change the way people think and behave at work. And then really, when I was at MindGym, I had this kind of epiphany moment that organizations were getting kind of more and more complex with more and more priorities, and trying to get things done was more and more difficult. So got curious about this topic of organizational simplicity, got connected with a guy and an academic who had done some work in that space. And then basically over the last 12 years or so, I've been working at this topic. And now kind of other things as well around kind of culture transformation. But that's a bit of a rapid kind of CV tour.
No, I appreciate the rapid CV tour. But just tell us a little bit about the role that you have at the moment, because you're a partner with Heidrick & Struggles, but you're now in New York. But by your accent would suggest you're not from those parts.
The Devon dialogue is still, or dialect, I should say, is still there. So I moved there last year. Yep. I sit in our consulting business, helping organizations with culture transformation, leadership development, team alignment, helping them align on purpose-driven transformation, of which simplicity is a kind of key design principle. Like you spend more time than our loved ones would like on airplanes kind of seeing clients, but trying to do the good work.
Yeah, that's a story for another day. It really is, isn't it? Let's zone in on this topic of simplicity, because it does keep coming up, and the world has gone bonkers. I keep saying that. Mm. Let me ask you, why? What was it that got you interested in this first? What happened, or what sequence of events were going on when you thought, hang on, I'm onto something here?
Yeah, so I think when I was at Accenture, we were doing big transformation programs. Yep. And, sometimes it felt like we were bringing more and more new ideas into organizations that all had their validity in their place. But it felt like it was harder and harder to get things done. And this would have been back in about 2007, 8, 9, 10.
Right.
And then at MindGym, similarly, you know, the work we were doing kind of all made sense, but you could just see the managers and the leaders that we were working with were just overwhelmed and overloaded. And, you know, cloud computing was becoming a thing. There was more data available. Yep. There were more projects being spun up. There was pressure on business models. There was business model innovation. So organizations were just overloaded. So really, I had this kind of epiphany that what if we could help organizations start to take things away?
Yes.
If we could subtract to create the capacity and the space.
Because we naturally add, don't we? Add all the time.
We do.
More and more.
It's in our nature, right? So we, you know, if you look at the evolution of the human species, you know, we've been hunter-gatherers. It was, you know, out in the plains, it was a good idea to kind of stash the food you might need. So you kind of added and added and added. So we've got this kind of psychological psych, if you like, that's inbuilt to add, to innovate, to engineer. And much of that is good, but sometimes it gets in the way of the things that matter.
Okay.
And that's particularly true in organizations where you bring, you know, thousands of people together, you've got objectives, you've got goals, you've got priorities, and you have this kind of mess, candidly, of things that are just kind of overlapping from each other. So really this idea of being able to bring minimalism, subtraction, reductionism into organizations to really create energy and capacity for the things that really matter most,
yes,
at the expense of the things that really don't.
I've been wanting to get you in and have this conversation for a long time because it does, and you probably find as well, this keeps coming up in conversation, doesn't it? Or you can see it when you go into organizations. I always say that I think we're very humbled, aren't we, by the work that we do, that we get an opportunity to go in some of the biggest organizations in the world and really understand how they operate. But as you say, the complexity is astonishing. Maybe we called that innovation to start with until we added. Just help us understand how big an issue is complexity for organizations right now.
I mean, in the research that we do with organizations when we diagnostic, organizational complexity has never been higher and continues to grow. And there's different ways you can measure the impact of that.
Yep.
So Warwick Business School did some work a few years ago looking at the impact on profit. And they found that on average of large publicly traded companies, 10.2% of EBITDA is wasted due to unnecessary
10.2%,
which you know, equates to billions and billions of dollars. There's other research out there by various consulting companies that kind of show the relationship between organizations that have high complexity and low employee engagement, and organizations that have the highest organizational complexity are three times more likely to have lowly engaged employees. So there's a really kind of clear link there. And then there's also kind of research that shows that organizations with high complexity, you know, struggle to get things done. They struggle to innovate. And we've done our own research on this recently where we've looked at the quality of cultures in large organizations. And we've seen a really clear link between those that have high quality cultures are able to drive kind of 90% more revenue growth over 5 years and 30% more profit growth over 5 years. And the second biggest correlator of a high-performing culture, a low-performing culture, is organizational simplicity. So the business case is kind of super clear. If you focus on this, if you really prioritize it, you can, you know, make your employees happier, your customers happier, and you can drive more kind of shareholder return.
Well, if ever anyone needed a compelling case, I think you've just probably stated it. Are you finding that in your travels, and I'm finding as well, but just help me with this, that actually leadership and culture are two massive components of a business now able to differentiate itself and succeed in a world that is highly chaotic? Are you finding that as well in your travels?
Yeah, I am.
Right.
I am. And coming back to the simplicity point, I mean, again, the research that we do shows that the vast majority of organizational complexity is self-generated. And this organizational complexity,
the human.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. It's decisions that we make, it's behaviors that we carry, it's, you know, adding things in and not taking them out. So even in this kind of mega VUCA world that we live in, a lot of this, well, the vast majority of this organizational complexity is self-generated. It's a homemade problem. So if you carry that argument forward, if you really want to drive simplicity, you need to rewire the culture, you need to rewire the way leaders think and actually get them to drive simplicity through their teams, through their organization.
So anyone listening or watching this, actually, as a leader of small, medium or large, this really should be a priority for them to consider and proactively manage and lead on with. Is that really the suggestion?
It is absolutely the suggestion. I mean, we talk about leaders getting kind of complexity conscious and being able to tell the difference between good complexity in their organization and bad complexity.
Oh, well, help us understand. What is good and what is bad? I think that's a conversation we need to have.
Yeah, well, good complexity, just a kind of a very simple definition, where the value of the complexity outweighs the cost, that complexity is good. So if you've got a management report, let's give a simple example, that is helping an organization make good decisions where it allocates its capital, and the outcome of those decisions generates, you know, more revenue, more profit, better engaged employees, then the net of that piece of complexity is positive.
The effort is worth the output.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the inverse is true.
Right.
So where the cost of the complexity is not worth the effort, then that needs to be challenged. So you either eliminate that or you look to kind of radically simplify it. And honestly, what happens in an organization is that good complexity becomes bad complexity over time. So as the context of the organization changes,
right,
the complexity needs to be challenged. So going back to that report, we see this quite often when we work with organizations. You know, an organization might miss a KPI or it brings in a new product and there's a lot of curiosity about how the product is performing. It makes a lot of sense in those scenarios to bring in a report that generates some data that helps you make better decisions. As the organization's context changes, maybe that product gets taken away. Maybe a poor performing team missed a metric, you know, in one quarter, yep, but then it's kind of back on track. You've got to challenge that complexity. Is it worth having it in the system? If it's in the system, it has a cost,
right,
in terms of time, in terms of energy, in terms of distraction. So being able to like really clearly challenge good and bad is really the essence of what we're, you know, helping leaders think through.
So am I right in thinking that actually if you're deploying certain processes and procedures, you've got to regularly look and review them because they might just be simply not fit for purpose given the changing context?
Completely.
And actually the changing context now is almost sped up even more so just by what's going on around us in the world.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. I've got to ask you to tell the story because you've got this wonderful example, haven't you, with reference to the CIA and how complexity can be used for nefarious purposes. So tell us a little bit about that because I love this story.
Yeah, I don't mind. Some of the viewers may have heard this before, but the Office for Strategic Services, which became the CIA,
right,
in 1944, taught its agents to create complexity in the government that the US was at war with.
Right.
So it was a simple sabotage field manual. You can look it up. It's on the CIA's website. It's been declassified.
It's open source.
Exactly. And you know, if you read through it, you can see that it advises agents and teaches agents how to bring up irrelevant issues as often as possible. Add pointless items to agendas. You know, never permit shortcuts. Talk in long-winded ways. You know, communicate unnecessarily. So all of the things that we may experience in our own organizations, you know, the US in 1944 was using as a weapon of war. And there's a kind of serious kind of anecdote to the, you know, to that story, which is, you know, if we can see that as a, you know, calamitous kind of set of examples and stories, but actually we can experience it in our own organization, you know, we're just getting in our own way. We're slowing ourselves down. And this is where it comes back to the kind of cultural leadership point, where if you're doing that as a leader, and most people, to be really clear, when they're creating complexity, are doing so either unconsciously or unintentionally, right? It's not that people...
It's
not deliberate mischief, no.
It's almost the human.
It's a learned behavior.
Yeah.
It's a learned behavior. So, but if you see it in others, and we all do, right, you should challenge it. I mean, because if it's kind of wasting the organization's time, money, talent, and you've got only a finite amount of those things,
yes,
then it's getting in the way of stuff that could drive even more outcome for your organization.
And anyone within an organization could be spotting complexity and could be raising that or identifying that to the leadership.
Everyone needs to. And there is, and again, when we do research on this with organizations, you know, there is definitely a relationship between seniority and the complexity experience. And typically, senior leaders create the most complexity, they create shadow complexity into their organization.
Why is that happening?
I think for a couple of different reasons. I think leaders are under pressure to innovate and change and transform. You know, transformation in organizations has never been greater.
Right.
And I think with that comes changes in direction, changes in decisions, changes in what gets funded, etc. And I think, again, it goes back to the point that we talked about a minute ago, which is if you don't take things out, you're just adding new things in.
Right.
So you end up with this kind of waterfall effect in organizations where complexity kind of ripples down through the organization. And the paradox actually is that leaders quite often don't feel it. They don't see it because they're above it. So you need to be able to empower the organization to be able to continuously challenge the complexity that they feel, where it doesn't make sense, call it out, and look to basically be able to weed it out of the system. It's like weeding your garden.
Right.
You know, and if you want beautiful flowers to bloom in April, you need to take the weeds out of the flower beds in kind of February, March. It's the same kind of metaphor.
Well, there's an element there, isn't there? One can promote simplicity, but you've got to kill complexity as well. And let's talk a little bit about cause and symptoms, because as you say, it may well be those lower within an organization who are suffering the effects of complexity, as opposed to maybe the leaders who are creating the strategy in the first place. So tell me a little bit about what are some of the causes first, and then we'll talk about some of the symptoms. So where can we look for those root causes?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a multitude of different causes of complexity. And one of the things that's important when you think about this topic is that organizations are complex adaptive systems. And what that basically means is you've got sets of components that are interacting with each other. So whether it's processes, whether it's people, whether it's customers, whether it's meetings, you've got all of these different things that don't exist in isolation. So if you were to use a traditional kind of problem-solving toolkit like Lean Six Sigma, it's less effective in diagnosing the real root causes of complexity because it looks at things kind of quite isolated and assuming linearity. Whereas here, complexity is emergent. You've got lots of things that are actually connecting with each other that are changing over time. So organizations are never static. They're always dynamic. So it's a bit like, you know, we're not far from the M25. You know, the M25 is a complex adaptive system. You've got cars that are kind of interacting with each other in the system of a motorway. Organizations are kind of quite similar. So when you start to look at the causes of complexity, you need to look very holistically. And that will be, you know, there are cultural causes of complexity. You know, the inability for an organization to say no to things.
Right.
The inability for the organization to...
FOMO.
Yeah, exactly. And we talk about JOMO, right? The joy of missing out. So yeah. Get kind of really clear about the thing that you're doing and don't worry about anything else. So there are cultural things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that could be, you know, a lack of an accountability mindset, you know, trying to overcommit to different things. There are process things. So that could be that you've got kind of big cross-organizational processes where you haven't got clarity on who's accountable for what.
Yep.
And you see, particularly the interfaces between teams, complexity tends to be highest. You can have strategic causes. So this could be an organization has got too many products. I was talking to a client yesterday about this, where too many products, trying to service those products, trying to fund those products,
right. It's
creating a kind of complexity backdraft into the organization. And then you can have organizational complexity. So either through the way the organization is designed or, you know, you've got different business units interacting with functions, you know, again, at those interfaces, complexity can be kind of super high. So,
okay. And
then obviously you've now got Gen AI, you've got technology, you've got digital transformation, you know, so all of those things are actually an opportunity to take complexity out. But if you don't bring a kind of simplicity mindset into how you're using that in your organization, it runs the risk of actually being another source of complexity.
So I know you talked about radical simplicity can be applied to every corner of an organization, and you talk about strategy and structure, process, technology, product, services. Is the common denominator, though, humans?
Yes.
So we're the ones who can kill complexity and promote simplicity. Is that a fair comment? Am I oversimplifying things?
No, it is a fair comment. And we talk about this with our clients, that you can simplify processes, you can simplify structures.
But that's not the real root cause,
exactly.
Is it?
If you don't change the fundamental root cause, which is leadership and culture, then those things that you've simplified will come back to be complex. We talk about this notion of zombie complexity.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, it's just basically complexity that you simplify, but because you haven't addressed the real root causes, it comes back.
Right.
It comes back from the dead. And usually it comes back in a way that's kind of worse than before. And you create frustration because, you know, quite often...
People say you're just reinventing the wheel, or we've done something, we're just back to square.
Yeah.
Right.
And something else would have come into the void to replace that. And then you've got the thing that came into the void and the old complexity back. And then you've got someone that's overwhelmed again.
So what should leaders be thinking about almost for a mandate? A mandate to kill complexity, promote simplicity. Anyone listening or watching this, what should they just initially be thinking about? Because they might think, oh, my word, my business. You know, I've had leaders sat exactly where you are whose organizations are 400,000 strong. Mm. Listen, even if your organization is 200 strong, that's a complex system of people. Mm. Where do you start?
Well, you can draw inspiration. There are organizations and leaders that have been successful with this.
Okay.
So we can talk about a couple of those. So, you know, from yesteryear, Jack Welch, quite famously at GE, had the workout program, which every business unit at GE, every function, was tasked every 90 days with taking work out of the GE system. So it was this kind of simplicity on steroids process and set of workshops that really drove simplicity through the culture of GE.
But that was a defined action for people to take.
A repeatable process that every leadership team is expected to go and run.
Right.
Steve Jobs, famously kind of a simplicity nut. You know, if you listen to anybody that worked with Steve at Apple, you know, every day asking his team, what have you said no to today? What have you said no to today? Really kind of driving this notion of opportunity cost through the organization. If we want to be great at this, we have to say no to that.
Right.
And more recently, Elon Musk. I mean, people that work with Elon, you know, I don't think he's the easiest to work with, but he's got a very high bar on where he deploys his time, where he deploys his capital, because he's got huge ambitions in the projects that he's running. So there are ways you can draw example. And then basically, there are a set of behaviors and mindsets. And, you know, these are a bit contextual depending on the organization that you're working in.
Okay.
But really, it comes down to two things. The first thing is providing radical clarity in terms of what's most important for your organization. and having fewer better priorities
okay.
at the organization and team level, right? So that if you don't have clarity on what's important, then you can't have simplicity.
Does that take a little bit of courage as well,
yeah.
Adam? Because a lot of people are thinking about products and services and just not knowing the direction of the world right now. You know, we're in a 2024, which is going to be the year of, was it the most global elections ever? So with that ambiguity, are people finding it difficult to nail the colors to the mast?
I don't know that it's difficult nailing the colors to the mast. I just think that it's easy to say yes to lots of things,
right.
and harder to say no.
Okay.
Right? It goes back to the kind of
basic. It comes back to that. Yeah,
it
definitive
does.
Way of saying no. Let's stop something.
Exactly, and you know, we're not saying here that companies shouldn't innovate and companies shouldn't change. But if you have 15 strategic priorities,
yep.
that's harder to execute against than three. Right, so there is a
less is more.
A less is more. Yeah, this is about basic reductionism, basic minimalism, and focus. So once you've got that clarity on what your organization is trying to do, you can link it to purpose. You should link it to strategy. You then need everybody kind of marching towards that, and then you also need. So that's the first point. The second point is then building a culture where bad complexity is challenged. If you've got activity
yep.
that is getting in the way of those strategic priorities, it's having the courage and having the process to weed that out and making that a core part of your culture where leaders are doing that, they expect their teams to do it, and the whole organization is empowered to do it. And that's how you sustainably drive simplicity into an organization's culture.
Am I right in thinking that for that to happen successfully, there has to be a speak-up culture, a psychologically safe culture, a feedback culture, so that senior leaders will look out for and listen for that kind of feedback to say something's not working. That we created something isn't working in the system.
Yeah, you need that. It's really hard to have a culture where people can challenge the status quo
yeah.
if you don't have that. And again, you there's a real clear link as well. If we assume that people want to do meaningful work and people want to do purposeful work and work that drives an organization forward, and all the research and all of our experiences shows that people do want to work on the stuff that makes a difference, then helping them do that by eliminating the stuff that gets in the way is typically something that employees react well to.
Okay. I want to ask you a question because things have become slightly messy, not just in the world, but within organizations. Mm. So you and I may have, I'm older than you, Adam, but you and I may have grown up through an era of quite defined hierarchies or of top down.
Mm.
But now we're seeing many examples, aren't we, of swarms and tribes and a level of interconnectedness that is not defined in some simple hierarchy map. Is that helping or hindering this process?
It has the ability to help.
Yep.
So the Agile Manifesto, talks about simplicity yep. and maximizing the work that's not done. So if you take the very kind of notion of how Agile works and getting kind of really clear about, what you're trying to achieve in terms of a goal and ensuring that aligns to an organization's objectives and then essentially resourcing that through sprints, the very definition of that should help you get the work that matters done at the cost of the work that doesn't. I think the challenge is that Agile, as it swarms across organizations and, is still, in most cases, pretty immature, you end up with overlap and you end up with a lack of clarity. So I do see it getting in the way. But also hierarchies, do create complexity. We see in our work that complexity is highest between the interfaces of organizations. So that's, okay. if you look at the layers in an organization,
yep.
or you look at how the work connects between individuals and teams across an organization,
yeah.
that is where complexity is the highest. Complexity is the lowest inside teams. So where work happens inside a team, where you've got, a single leader or a single group of leaders responsible for the outcome and the resourcing to the outcome and can kind of control the work, simplicity is higher. Where you've got work that spans either layers or across organizations, across teams,
right.
That's where you have a lack of clarity about who's actually accountable and you have different interests in terms of goals, objectives, and resources.
Gotcha. I do want to ask you, I will ask you in relation to best advice for a leader and best advice for an organization, which is made up of people, obviously.
Yeah.
But can we talk a little bit about mindsets and behaviors? Because I've always had a simple premise that as you believe, so you behave, and as you behave, so you perform.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the mindset that is necessary within the leadership or within the organization to start to get this process to manifest itself. So what's the mindset, Adam?
There's a few, but if I just pick on a couple of them. So I think being super clear
yep.
and over communicating clarity is really important. As we said kind of earlier, if you're not clear on what's important, then everything becomes important. So you need real clarity. And I remember being in an elevator coming down a skyscraper in the city of London 7 or 8 years ago with a CFO at the time that Bitcoin was kind of becoming very, very, very popular. He made a throwaway remark to someone on his team around, you know, what would happen if a Bitcoin hacker was to hold us to ransom? Like, what would we do? Literally a throwaway comment. You know, 6 weeks later, 180-page slide deck with various scenarios and analysis had been prepared and brought back to the CFO to his horror. You know, he didn't ask for that, but the signal that he sent by not being clear meant that a lot of work was created for the organization, for that team, at the cost of other stuff, right? So being really clear is important. And then, you know, being bold and being courageous and actually being having the courage to say no to things as a leader makes a massive difference to what your teams work on. It sets a really big signal. We're not going to do this because of these reasons.
Okay.
And these reasons are because other things are more important. So being bold and being clear are the two that we kind of work with every leader on. And then really getting this kind of, we talked about it earlier, this kind of complexity consciousness to be higher, getting feedback
to
leaders.
Help us with that. How do people bring it from the subconscious to the conscious to be really alert around complexity? How do we change that within an organization too?
Well, because the complexity has become this kind of learned behavior, a lot of leaders are just not aware of the complexity shadow that they create. So again, it goes back to a speak up culture, having psychological safety, you know, giving people permission and making an expectation that if you're my leader and I'm not clear about what you're asking me to do, or what you're asking me to do doesn't make sense to me, or it's creating kind of more work for me than you might see, you might initially see, it's actually having the courage and being expected to say, hey, Adam, like that, I know you've asked me to do that, but just checking, that's going to take me 3 days of work. And actually, I think this would be a better use of my time. You then start having this kind of culture where everybody is speaking up and getting clarity about what they're working on, the value of it, and how it's going to drive, you know, value for the organization.
Everyone needs a critical friend, don't they? I want to keep going a little bit on the behaviors, really, off the mindset. You talked about be bold. Mm-hmm. You talked about be clear. Mm-hmm. Let's just touch on the other three. We have touched on them, but let's call them out. One of them is be trusting. Tell me a little bit about the element of trust that's absolutely necessary for this too.
Yeah. So, I mean, trust is something that's talked about a lot in organizations. Yep. We see a clear correlation where there's low trust, there's high complexity. So again, if you think about organizations and their basic setup, you know, you've got leaders leading teams, teams leading kind of other parts of the organization. Yep. The work getting done where it's best to get done is basically the premise behind being trusting.
Okay.
So it's actually ensuring that your team and their teams have the right clarity of what you're asking them to do, and you're fully empowering them and fully trusting them to be able to go and do that.
Okay.
So that's kind of as a kind of top-down level. There's then another level, which is basically not having to be involved in everything. And we see this particularly with senior leaders.
Well, we end up being a bottleneck.
Yeah, we end up being a bottleneck, and we end up wanting to hedge politically our capital. So we end up kind of wanting to be in things because it's safer to be in things and not to be in things. So again, it's being kind of very brave, very bold, and trusting that, you know, if you're not in a meeting because you don't need to be there, you know, that's not gonna slow down your kind of agenda as a leader, and actually the right people are doing the work.
We've all had clients, haven't we, Adam, on one occasion where 44 people are CC'd into the email on the basis that it's almost, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger in relation to no one not being involved. And again, it's that trust that my team have got this.
It is. And you know, meetings are another place where we see this. You go into meetings where you've got similar numbers of people and you know, you don't need that many people there to do what needs to be done.
No, so it's having the trust. The other end of it.
Exactly.
Being pragmatic, I always love the phrase, you know, busy is the new stupid. Mm. Tell us a little bit about this pragmatism that's necessary.
I think that it goes back a little bit to, you know, we touched on kind of new technology and sometimes, you know, if something's new, we assume it must be good. And we see this in our work in simplicity. So, you know, if two people can make the decision, let two people make the decision. Don't invite 20 people for the sake of it. If a process really is not a process, it's just one person making a decision, make it a decision. So this notion of pragmatism over, you know, over-engineering something.
Or even overly collaborative.
Yeah, and collaboration is one of those things where it's interesting. So it's a bit like, you know, too hot, too cold, just right. So collaboration, I think, is the same thing. So you can have too little collaboration can create complexity.
Yep.
If you don't engage the right people, they've got value to add to a better outcome.
You want to embrace that diversity of thought.
Correct. And too much collaboration can slow a decision down or can bring too many points of view and that actually gets in the way. So so again, this is there's no magic bullet for this. This is really about kind of for the thing that you're thinking about, what is the optimal level of pragmatism when it comes to driving simplicity? And it, you know, we bring examples of kind of, you know, science and humanities and everyday life into our work. And there's a great example of pragmatism that I think really illustrates this, which is the balance bike. So you and I are old enough that when we, you know, learned to ride a bicycle, we had basically an adult bike that was shrunk to be a kid-sized bike. Yeah. It had brakes, it had a chain, some of them had gears.
The Tomahawks?
Well, that was a little bit before my time.
I've just aged myself. I'll stop right there.
But you basically had an adult bike that was shrunk down, and then you added stabilizers onto the side of it to stop you from kind of falling off and grazing your knee. Somebody saw this and just thought, actually, if the goal here is to help a child learn to ride a bike, why don't we actually take the stabilizers away? Why don't we take the brakes away? Why don't we take the chain away?
Yeah.
Why don't we take the pedals away? And basically you have handlebars, a seat, and two wheels, and let the child use their legs.
As the stabilizer.
As the stabilizer. Yeah. So pragmatism. So you've taken away 70% of what was on the kid's bike, and now kids learn to ride a bike much earlier using this kind of method, because the basic balance, which is really what riding a bike is all about, has been embraced to a better outcome.
That's a great example.
Through pragmatism.
Didn't Jeep do this as well?
Just enough essential parts.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this story I think is a bit in folklore, but
that's fine.
The notion of Jeep. So JEEP stands for just enough essential parts.
Right.
So on a in that kind of thinking, a Jeep has everything it needs to be a Jeep and no more. So it doesn't have, you know, a roof rack. It doesn't have fluffy dice coming down from the rearview mirror. It doesn't have things that are unnecessary. It's got everything it needs to be to be a Jeep.
To do what it needs to do.
Exactly.
Okay. Let me just deal with the fifth of really the behaviors, and that's to be obsessed.
Mm.
Tell us a little bit about that, this relentless seeking out of simplicity, because as you say, that almost needs to become the learned behavior. Just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so complexity, as organizations transform and change, complexity will naturally get generated.
Right.
And you want that good complexity being generated. So to be super clear, good complexity is something that organizations should seek, should drive.
And it will naturally happen.
It will naturally happen.
Just add people naturally.
Yeah, but you need to, again, just, you know, adding people like complexity, you need to make sure it's adding good complexity.
Okay.
Right? So and making sure they're kind of geared up to do the right thing. The be obsessed really is a little bit like, and we use this metaphor with our clients, you know, the garden is never done. You know, if you've got a garden, you know, you can't just mow the lawn once in April and then assume that it'll be fine for the rest of the year. You know, you need to tend to the garden every week or every couple of weeks. And the same thing is true for simplicity. So you need to be obsessed in really asking the question, is what we're doing driving us towards our strategy and goals? And really getting this rhythm into the organization where you're continually challenging how the work that happens is linking to the goals of the organization. So when we talk about being obsessed, it's really getting organizations and leaders in particular to continually challenge, you know, is this really the best use of our time, talent, and money?
So let me just go through those five and make sure I'm correct here, Adam. So be clear, be trusting, be bold, be pragmatic, and be obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
I love the gardening analogy. I'm assuming there's no gardening for you in the middle of New York City.
There's not.
You're going back to your Devon days, perhaps, with that. Let me come back to some good examples. I know there are organizations who have had success in proactively killing complexity, promoting simplicity. Can you give us a couple of examples of maybe household names who are doing this?
Mm. So one of my favorite ones is the Home Depot. So they're a big US retail store, and they were driving a culture transformation about 15 years ago,
right,
where new CEO would come in, kind of observe that too much bureaucracy coming in the system. They were struggling to grow. You know, profit wasn't where it needed to be. Customers weren't delighted, and neither were employees.
Right.
So did a bit of a listening tour, as many CEOs do, and kind of talked to store managers about their experience of being a store manager. And basically was horrified to see the number of requests coming from head office.
Yeah.
So corporate functions asking for updates on this, and this. Whether it's HR, finance, whatever it might be, and again, you know, that's good intent. These leaders are not putting reports and requests into the store to try and, you know, slow the store down or annoy the store manager. They're doing what they think is right in their context. But he asked every store manager when they got something that they didn't see the value in. So every time they got a request from head office, they didn't see a value in. He gave them an anti BS, and we've probably got kids that listen to the show, so we'll let BS kind of be interpreted as it needs to be.
Yeah.
Gave them a stamp, anti-BS, and said, stamp that and send it to me. So basically, again, this notion of being at a challenge. So we ended up collecting a series of these requests from head office that store managers didn't see any value in, that he could then go and have a conversation with the leaders in those functions to really say, what is it we're really looking for here? Because the cost of your request is keeping a store manager off the store floor.
Right.
It's preventing them from working with their team. It's preventing them from talking to customers because they're tying themselves up for days a week in basically coming back with information and data for you. So that's one that I like. Another is we worked with an airline a couple of years ago who we did a whole bunch of things with, but basically one of the things was around getting better meetings, better quality meetings. And meetings are kind of something that kind of comes up regularly in our work.
That's such a challenge for every organization, isn't it, of any size?
It is, and we're social creatures, right? So there is something about
kind especially of, post-pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'm not here to say for a minute that all meetings are bad. You know, it's really, again, just bringing this kind of high challenge and being obsessed to improve them. But we work with that leadership team to bring in what we call decision-first meetings, where the chair of a meeting was sent out an agenda in advance. We know that doesn't happen in itself.
Yeah.
But against the agenda, he or she could actually put their recommendation and their decision against those agenda items.
Right.
So if everybody agreed, you know, you didn't need to have the meeting, or you could skip through the agenda items that you had alignment on and then focus the time having debate and discussion around the ones where there wasn't alignment. So again, simple kind of shortcuts that you can actually just, you know, experiment with to try and get to a better outcome.
Adam, here's the irony. I'm hearing that there are some simple things that can be done to create simplicity, but yet we do completely the reverse. I was at an event last night, and I heard a story about Apple, about how some of the Apple execs have GSD meetings, which stands for Get Shit Done. Mm. And it's exactly that, where they have two-hour blocks, and anyone who wants to have a conversation has a 15-minute window out of the two-hour block. Mm. And they've got 10 minutes of that 15 minutes to state exactly what is the opportunity, question, challenge, what is the ask, and then the decision can be made. Then there's a five-minute gap, and then you go on to the next one. So in that 2 hours, there are eight meetings and eight decisions which allow things to get done. It's pretty simple if you think about it, but why are organizations just not doing that? Again, we're coming back to mindset, or we're coming back to fear. What is it?
It's learned behavior. It's we've just got used to working in complexity. So it's not being able to kind of see an alternative. And just getting comfortable and actually this kind of pushing a boulder up a hill, which is what it can kind of feel like, getting things done in an organization, is just the only way. And what's interesting in the work we do, we'll quite often take execs to go and meet startups and startup founders.
Right.
And startups just don't have the luxury of being able to waste time or capital or energy on bad complexity, right? They're going from funding round to funding round. So everything they do has a high cost. So you can look at the culture in many of these startups, and as they grow, they have a challenge, which is kind of weeding that bad complexity out. But they're typically pretty good at being able to ensure that they're optimizing their time because it's so limited. But this stuff is just become built up in organizations. It just becomes something that has become so entrenched in the culture that unless you have a CEO-sponsored or senior leader-sponsored kind of culture change around this, it's very, very, very difficult to get people to shot themselves out of what they've always done.
Well, that neatly takes me on to maybe some advice that you can give anyone listening or watching as regards to the role of the leader and the role of the organization. And I've definitely heard something there in relation to the role of the leader as the role model. Mm. So let's start with that. What would be your top tips for any leader to try and win at this?
So two things. Yep. So the first thing is to write down on a one page, and you know, you could do this digitally or actually a Sharpie on a piece of paper.
Old school.
The three things that are your biggest priorities and making sure that your team are radically aligned on those.
Okay.
Right? And get down to three. You know,
because 10 priorities equals no priorities, right?
Exactly. If everything's important, nothing's important, right? So get down to three. That's really important.
All right.
Then empower your team and the team of your teams to really identify where you think bad complexity is getting in the way.
Okay.
So crowdsource examples. And with that, be able to kind of be able to pinpoint culturally where you as a leader and your team as leaders are actually creating complexity for the organization. So get clear on your complexity shadow. And then with that, you can then actually start to see opportunities to really start driving simplicity into the organization.
So it's creating some form of momentum, isn't it, within the organization? organization.
Yeah, and you've got to be a bit vulnerable as a leader. You know, you've got to be able to go and
I'm hearing that time and time again at the moment, Adam, without a doubt. What's the role of the organization? Because the organization is made up of humans. So help us with that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this comes down to a culture change, right? Yeah. So when we've got a process, clarify, identify, simplify, sustain. And ultimately with that, what we're trying to do is get everyone in the organization really clear on what they should be working on.
Okay, let's go through these four stages.
So get super, super, super clear on what you're trying to achieve as an organization and how the power of simplicity is going to help you get there. Identify is being able to find and get clarity on the good complexity versus the bad complexity. So the good complexity you should be looking to leverage and drive more of. The bad complexity we should be looking to eliminate or at least minimize. Getting kind of really clear on that. And then as part of that process, being able to identify some of those drivers of complexity, both culturally, organizationally, process technology, et cetera. Simplify is really kind of what it says on the tin. That's actually taking things out of the organization, right? So eliminating processes, eliminating meetings, or at least radically reducing them. And being able to use, you know, a very simple toolkit to be able to do that.
Yes.
And then sustain is making sure that behaviorally you're actually driving the behaviors that are looking to sustain simplicity in your organization. So you avoid that kind of zombie complexity that I talked about earlier. And we're doing this with a client at the moment. So we've got a client at the moment where we've set a 2 million hour challenge for this client. It's a technology organization. And we're looking to eliminate 2 million hours of unnecessary work.
Wow.
To reinvest that capacity in things that are going to drive the organization forward. And that kind of spans that whole process that I talked through.
Now, that equates to a significant dollar number, 2 million hours. Is there an element of experimentation to this as well? Mm. Because, as you say, those are the four stages you've outlined, but we're not always going to get all things right first go. So tell us where maybe experimentation comes into this as well.
Yeah, and you shouldn't try and change everything in one go because that will create kind of chaos in the organization. So having some degree, when you do this for the first time, being able to prioritize the things that are going to make the biggest difference is important. But yeah, I mean, experimentation is really important. And we say, you know, with these meetings that you're in, if they feel that complex, experiment with some of the ideas that, you know, either we provide or they can generate.
Yeah.
The worst that can happen is you can put it back to what it is today.
Right.
That's the worst that can happen. So being able to...
Reset,
exactly. So being able to, you know, if it's a two-hour meeting, making it an hour. If you've got 20 people, inviting 10. If it's a decision that requires five sign-offs, can it have two? Right? So these are all experiments.
These are quick wins, aren't they? Or could be.
Yeah, really quick wins.
Okay. Adam, how do people get in touch with you, get you involved in their conversation, or get us to get help?
Yeah, well, I'm passionate about this topic, and I know you are as well. So... You know, reach out to either us on LinkedIn, go to the Hydrate website. We've got white papers there. We've got research there. Just get in touch. We'd love to kind of have the conversation with you.
What I'll do is I'll put some URLs. I'll put the links to some of the research papers as well, and I'll put in your contact details as well, if that's okay. That will go into the show notes, and then will be disseminated, and then we just need to share this with the world, if that's all right.
A simplicity revolution shall start.
Starting right here. You heard it here first. Listen, Adam, thanks very much for flying all the way to London, especially for the show, which is not true, but I hope you've enjoyed it.
I did. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.